Good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet and I'm here in the studio with Letitia McDaniel and the late Patty Fink.
I'm here.
I know
I'm
you're
alive,
here.
I'm
you're
alive.
Here. Well, because it's a holiday, so you're up nice and early. You're not dragging, saying, oh, after your show and then the real job. And no guests today. We're just going to talk the news. So, Letitia, you're our resident scientist. What do you have to say about the discovery of the Higgs boson? No?
But I do have something to say about global warming, which has been a recent topic with all the heat that we've been getting here and the Northeast, which they've been complaining about for, well, of course, you know, they don't have any electricity, so that's why they're complaining. Mm-hmm. But now everybody's seriously talking about global warming now. like it was a myth or something, like it was the Loch Ness Monster for like the last 20 years. So I don't know what's up with that.
But speaking of Loch Ness Monster...
Oh, don't even talk about my home state.
Your home state of Ireland?
No, Louisiana.
Oh, that would be Scotland anyway.
Scotland, right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but there, it's the same thing I'm thinking about as
yeah,
far
I think
as...
So. School books and...
Yeah, the school books are now... They're teaching creationism, which includes the existence of the Loch Ness Monster in Louisiana. So...
Yeah.
So if it's alive, then it... You know, its existence would therefore debunk evolution, and therefore, you know, can't teach science to kids in school. Apparently, in Louisiana,
yeah, Louisiana kid.
So the Cajuns and the Creoles will come up thinking that the Loch Ness Monster is.
Yeah, they probably think it's in Pontchartrain or something.
Is it not?
No.
The big news, maybe this will appeal to her more than the Higgs boson particle.
I think it's pretty cool. I mean, CERN's been working a long time on that.
Yeah, they have been. And you know, that would have been discovered here if they didn't stop digging that hole in the ground under Waxahachie.
Oh, exactly.
So, I mean, that's what that was supposed to be, the accelerator there.
See, and the Swiss are having their day in the sun.
They are. And so is Anderson Cooper, because...
Oh, God.
The big news, the shock of the week, was that Anderson Cooper came out, which was probably the biggest surprise since Martina Navratilova and Ricky Martin came out.
I know.
But you know what?
Who
he
knew?
Really, you know, Erin has kept telling me this because she read his book, mm-hmm. That he talks about, you know, living the life of a gay man in his book, in his biography.
Sure.
But you see, this comes back to something we've talked about at length on this show, is that until you say the words, you have to say the words or people don't get it.
Yeah.
It's like Jodie Foster talking about her partner, and people, oh, no, she's not gay. She hasn't come out yet.
Right.
Because she didn't
right.
say, I'm gay, or I'm a lesbian,
you
or
know,
whatever.
One time I was watching something on CNN, and Anderson Cooper was interviewing somebody who was making T-shirts or something like that. And he said, well, I brought one for you and one for your girlfriend. And Anderson Cooper said, that would be boyfriend. And, you know, he said things like that on the air. So how much more out do you want him to be?
I know, exactly. I mean, I mean, there's pictures of him all around New York with his partner.
Yeah.
I mean, they're shirtless and everything. They're actually very nice pictures. But anyway, that's another story. But...
But he's never hidden being gay.
No, never.
He really hasn't. I mean, what do you want him to do? Yes, and in today's news, in Iraq, blah, 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 and I'm gay. You know, when do you make that?
And people don't understand that this is his job. You know, him being on TV is his job. So how many people are actually that open, or even though they're out, like I'm out at work, but I'm not just constantly, hey, I'm bye at work. Messing with the mice, bye. You know, I'm not like that at work. So how many people are actually that out and that open about their relationships in general at work, you know, gay, straight, whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I talk about Erin all the time. I mean, if I'm going to, you know, miss work or something because I'm going to go somewhere with Erin, I'll say, well, we're going to Erin's 30th high school reunion,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, yeah, but that's about as, you know, you're not saying, hey, lesbian, here I am, lesbian. You just say, oh,
no, I've never said that.
I have.
You have, really.
Not in that singing voice, but probably in that way, you know.
Well, I mean, this week at work, we did a front page story this week on Mary Gonzalez, who I'm going to try to get on our show. It's just that she's in a different time zone. Being in El Paso,
yeah,
she's a time zone behind us, which means coming on the air, waking up. We get up, it's at, you know, we're on the way to get here, 6 o'clock. that means five, that she has to be awake and aware. So it's always hard to get somebody from the back time zones on the show. But she was, you know, she's not comfortable calling herself lesbian. She prefers openly gay woman. And so I declared in the office, I'm going to be an openly lesbian man.
Well, you probably are a lesbian trapped in a gay man's body.
Something like that. But so, yes, Anderson Cooper came out. Before we get to anything more serious, there is a new show coming on NBC this fall called The New Normal, and it's the Danny and Laurent story. It's about a gay couple who find a surrogate, and they interview her, and she ends up staying in their life, apparently. And then they help her because she wants to get a law degree.
Is this reality or a comedy?
No, it's a comedy. It's a very funny show. There was one line that the couple is talking to each other, and one of them says, do you think that we should really, you know, bring a non-traditional family? Is it right to bring a family into the world this way, non-traditional? And the other one says, well, I know one person who's a black man who was raised by a white mother, and he's doing pretty well. And the other one says, oh, right, Mariah Carey.
Mariah Carey.
It looks like it's going to be a funny show. A real cute couple that stars. And it looks like they're... You know how Will and Grace, you never really believed that Will was gay? With this one, you got it right away. They really did have chemistry with each other.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway, and related to that, also related to Danny and Laron, there was a new study from San Francisco State University that showed that gay dads are also too tired for sex. It's not just heterosexual couples. Figured San Francisco State University would do that study, right?
It's important to know these things, you know?
I think it is.
Well, then I'll make sure that I'll not be a gay dad. How about you, Tish?
No kitties for me.
This week, big healthcare decision came out. John Roberts, Chief Justice, sided with the four liberals on the court. Anthony Kennedy, who's the swing vote, wrote the opinion for the conservatives on the court. So what do you think of the decision?
I'm shocked, but... not shocked. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to say that, but I personally still have a problem with the individual mandate as far as whether it's a tax or is it a penalty. I like to think of it as a penalty because, you know, I like to think of, you know what, you can afford health care, but you want to go through emergency room and bring the burden on all the rest of us. You know what, it should be a penalty on you, you know. But at the same time, should we be telling people, you know, should we encourage people to get health care instead of, you know, giving them a penalty? And besides, you know, it's this health care that we're getting, you know, we have to still buy it from people who jack your premiums up out of the water. So,
and I think that's the reason more people don't buy health care than anything, the affordability of it. Let's just go back to the general decision, though, first. What do you think of the decision?
Well, I loved that three women were on the...
Exactly.
Deciding side, mm-hmm. And that was kind of exciting that the three women on the court were part of the 5-4, the five of the 5-4. I was very happy to hear that it was upheld. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, when I work in healthcare, I think that it's a very very much a needed thing. If we're not going to go single payer with universal healthcare, then we need to. You know, the free riders, as Newt Gingrich and so many others, Senator Dole and others in the 1990s, you know, came up with this idea so that the free riders wouldn't get a free ride. Because, you know, they can sail along collecting their paychecks without taking anything out for health insurance, and then they get in a wreck or they get sick or whatever, and they go through the emergency room, and we're all stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
Taxpayers get stuck with their bill. Mm-hmm. And because they, you know, they don't have sufficient coverage in their bank accounts to cover it. And I think it's fantastic that it will cover more people. About 30 million more people will be able to carry health insurance. And it changes, I mean, let's all face it, this is about actuarial tables and how it all falls. And if the young, healthy people don't participate in a system and that's going to skew it for everybody. And it has been.
Mm-hmm.
It has been skewing it. So the haves have been paying for the have-nots in terms of those who carry insurance. And I think it's transformative for our healthcare system.
But they're going to have to make it affordable. They're going to have to make it affordable. Because I have a friend who's working minimum wage job, and they do offer healthcare at his job, but it's $300 a month. And he's making minimum wage, so how is he supposed to pay for that, you know?
And $300 a month for a health insurance policy actually is cheap.
It is,
so
yeah.
Something has to be done about the cost.
Mine is almost $500 a month, mm-hmm. and that's just me, and I'm a single person, mm-hmm. and of course, I'm lucky enough to work for the state, and they, you know, as a single person working for the state, they cover that, but I don't have $500 a month mm-hmm. to pay for insurance.
And my insurance mm-hmm. is even more expensive than that. And I have terrible coverage. I have a $10,000 deductible.
Oh, my God.
That's insane.
That is.
But if you get everybody playing in the system together, then
it's supposed to bring them down.
You know, it should balance out.
If they rein in the insurance companies and say, no, you can't charge that. Now, there are parts of the health insurance bill that do cap the percentage of money that they take in that they can keep as profit, but you can write off expenses like multi-million dollar salaries to the CEO and to the board and to the directors and to your top management, and well, we just can't manage our company without these people, and I mean that needs to be reined in. When it's required that you buy something from this company, they don't have the right to pay their CEOs and their executives those huge salaries. And I'm not saying they don't deserve a good salary or a great salary. I'm saying they don't deserve those bankrupting salaries. And that's what those are. The other thing that has to be reined in is that the insurance companies have every interest in jacking up the cost of health care, because if you can keep 20% as profit, well, let's say a procedure costs $1,000, you can keep $200 of the cost of covering that, but if it costs $2,000, you keep $400 of that cost. So it's in the insurance company's interest to see the cost of health care continue to skyrocket. That has to be stopped. Otherwise, we'll all be bankrupt, with a few people in the health insurance industry making fortunes, and that has to be stopped. And that's why this is not going to work, and why we're eventually going to have to go to single payer. I mean, and the way maybe we'll go to single payer is Medicare will be extended to people who are 60 and older, and then in a few years to 55 and older, and you know, and just wean ourselves of the insurance companies, because I don't see them making a change in that. That really bothers me.
Well, and this is never intended to be the end-all, be-all, because this, you know, just the politics of it was never going to go directly to single payer. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was the will to do that, either in the administration or in Congress. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think we're going to see single payer come soon.
You're right.
But I think it's this step, and we make this adjustment now, I think it could come much more easily in the future, you know?
Yeah,
and I was really shocked. I was watching the news yesterday that there was a poll that said 41% of Americans didn't even know that there was that it was upheld, that the
41%
didn't even know that the Affordable Care Act was upheld last week. So maybe this morning is the first time somebody's heard about it. So
that's really scary.
It is scary. That is scary.
Well, you know what's even?
Can you find Texas on a map? That's one of those things.
No, about as funny as the guy who, I think somebody from Dallas Voice posted that someone hadn't even heard that that Anderson Cooper had come out. Mm-hmm. And it was some guy from Fort Worth. So, you know, so it's about as clueless as that guy.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Yeah, the decision was 5-4, and they were saying that Roberts was the swing vote.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, he was a swing vote, because four liberals, three conservatives, one swing vote on the other side. And they're saying now that it's possible that Roberts actually wrote the majority of both opinions, that he had originally written on one side and then he wrote on the other. Conservatives are treating Roberts like he's the traitor. And to some extent, people are annoyed on the other side. They're annoyed at Kennedy for not just the opinion, but the nasty tone of the opinion, since the opinion is being credited to him. And the dissent really is nasty.
And they wanted to gut the whole thing.
Right.
They wanted to get rid of the whole thing.
Right.
In the dissent.
What do you think, first of all, of the idea that Roberts may have changed sides? And I'm asking this because news media is making a heyday out of this. Like, this is the biggest story. And I don't think it's much of a story at all, but what do you think of it?
Well, I think it's a story of somebody leaked what the process was.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that's a story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd like to know how that happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the opinion itself and the appearance that perhaps he flipped sides. I was talking with Aaron about this. I thought maybe, especially after Citizens United, which I think as they watch from behind their very tall desk at the Supreme Court, what's going on in this country as a result of their decision in this presidential election.
But they reinforced it this week with another decision.
Yeah, they did. They did. But I tend to think maybe he's... You know, he doesn't want to be part of that legacy, you know, and so he's trying to pull himself back into this moderate place.
Yeah.
And that's just my opinion. I have no idea.
Because we were talking about this earlier, like, you know, we had immigration, you know, the immigration decision in Arizona that was on Monday, and then we had the health care on Thursday, and then Citizens United was right smack in the middle, and then immigration and the health care kind of squished, you know, the kind of the air out of Citizens United and people, which is, I consider, one the most more important than the other two as far as decisions. But nobody's talking about that one as much as they were talking mm-hmm. about immigration and healthcare.
Well, because the Citizens United, this one, it wasn't Citizens United, but it was another case that that
reinforced
it.
It's about corporate money in elections.
Right.
And Montana doesn't want to have corporate money in elections. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court said
you have to.
Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was devastating.
Horrible
decision. Mm-hmm.
But Roberts was on the side of that, of yes, you have to have corporate money in your elections.
And, you know, we were talking about this over the weekend. You know, like, where is their corporation's, like, birth certificate? And I want to see the long form original one.
Right.
You know, and can they get married? What happens when they divorce? Is it split 50-50? You know, I mean, mm-hmm. who are these people? Who are the persons that are corporations? It's bizarre.
It is. We need to take a break. I want to stay on this a little bit because I have a slightly different take on Roberts changing sides if he did. Because I think it's a good thing, even if he changed the other way. I still think it's a good thing. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet. I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Letitia McDaniel. And we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
KNON thanks Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERimaging.com.
GoodSearch.com provides a way for you to support nonprofits like KNON with your online shopping and dining. GoodSearch.com offers a downloadable toolbar for searching from your computer called GoodApp, so your purchases can go to support KNON. With Good Dining, every time you go out to eat at participating restaurants, then a portion of what you spend gets donated to KNON. Registering is easy at GoodSearch.com, and KNON 89.3 is the name to enter in your account settings for charity selection. Support KNON with your online shopping and dining at GoodSearch.com.
Tune in every Monday morning at 7 a.m. to KNON's newest talk program, Jim Schutz, Get Off My Lawn, sponsored by the Dallas Observer. Jim Schutz, Get Off My Lawn brings you the story not covered by Dallas's other news outlets. Jim will be taking your calls and featuring special guests.
This is Jim Schutz. I'll be your host for Get Off My Lawn every Monday morning at 7 a.m. on KNON.
This is a random person, and I don't listen to Lambda Weekend on 89.3 KNON FM Dallas.
And I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Letitia McDaniel and the late Patty Fink, and we're just talking a little bit about the news this week. The healthcare decision came down. Interesting decision, but what seems to be more interesting is the way it was upheld, with the Chief Justice who apparently switched sides. Now, I think it's interesting that the two decisions were attributed and written by the liberal side, written by the conservative Chief Justice, and the conservative side written by the swing voter on that side. Mm-hmm. And I think that was done purposely in order for the conservatives not to look like they were just being, I'm against it because Obama's for it. And for the liberal side...
Because it sure did look that way, didn't it?
Yeah.
And if you read the opinion.
Well, yeah. And for the liberal side to not come under attack for, well, you know, of course Sotomayor wrote it. Well, of course it's liberal. But they can't say that when the Chief Justice is the one who wrote it. Now, here's what I'm thinking, and I disagree with every single one of these outraged commentators, mostly on Fox News, about the Chief Justice switching sides. I mean, everybody is talking about it like this is... You know, how could he do this to and the conservatives are just up. How could he do this and just show he's a traitor? Well, isn't it the job of a judge to go into a case with an open mind, mm-hmm. and then to consider the facts, and in a constitutional case to weigh that against the Constitution? And while some cases are more obvious, like the idea that a heterosexual couple can get married, but a gay couple cannot. To me, that's obvious discrimination when you're letting two people have tax breaks that you're not letting two other people have. That's obvious discrimination. And so if it went to the Supreme Court, it's going to be a 9-0 decision, of course, because it's so constitutionally obvious. But in a case like this, if he went from one side to the other and then kind of reluctantly found a way to uphold the law, I'm actually mostly on his side more than I am on the side of the other four justices. Here's why. I don't like the idea that we're buying insurance from private companies. I don't think that the government should be mandating that you have to do business with one of these, you know, so many private companies and have to give them all this money, 20% of which is just going to be profit for their shareholders. I'm completely against that.
When the state exchanges are set up, it'll be more choice.
There will be more choice. Of course there will be more choice. I'm not saying that they're not working on making it better. I'm saying that I understand being against that, but I understand coming over to the other side and saying that this is something that we're all paying for anyway, and the cost has to be spread out, and mm-hmm. for all the reasons, and for justifying it as, okay, not under the Commerce Clause because they don't have the right to tell you that you have to do business with a company, but they do have the right to say, if you don't want to buy this, we can then charge you a tax. Mm-hmm. And
by the way, healthcare is nothing like broccoli. You know,
right?
Healthcare system in this country is nothing at all like broccoli.
And I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, I'm agreeing with the Chief Justice because he went from one position, came to the other position, obviously weighed the two, and decided, since I'm not the obvious one to have written this decision, let me do the explaining. I think that's exactly what a justice is supposed to do. You know, in his confirmation hearings, he explained himself, and this probably explains how he did this and why he did this more than anything. He said that it's the job of the Supreme Court to find any reason to uphold the will of a legislature, of the elected legislature, mm-hmm. and we find things unconstitutional when we can't find a constitutional reason to uphold them. So if he was, I don't like this, but here's the constitutional reason, he went with what he said, and he was really being very consistent. But I'm all for his decision, don't get me wrong, and I think we need something that spreads universal health care or spreads health care to more people throughout this country and spreads the cost through throughout everybody in this country. There's just like people who are for single payer, which I am for, I don't like the having to do business with a company. Of course, conservatives don't like that coming from the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
But
you know, like even in a case like Lawrence v. Texas that mm-hmm. You know, directly affected the LGBT community, it, you know, there are lots of things that can be constitutional and unconstitutional for many different reasons. And you know, we were looking at that decision: is it going to be done on privacy? Is it going to be done on you know, equal protection under the law? What was all of those? But it could have been any one of them and had the same result. You know, so there's a lot of ways that you can look at the Constitution, which is, in my opinion, a living, breathing document. Certainly, if the people who say it's not want to change it, which just cracks me up.
Well, we want to change it to make it the way we want it to be,
right.
Which is not changing.
Right, right.
Okay.
So, you know, anyway.
We should repeal the 19th Amendment. Women should not have the right to vote. And why we should, you know.
Right, right.
All kinds of things.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying anything on that one.
But, no, it's just David.
I'm agreeing with you on that, that there are all kinds of reasons that we should find for upholding, and I like his reasoning that it's really his job to uphold the will of an elected legislature unless what they've done doesn't have any constitutional mm-hmm. reason. So he's looking at things from the positive, that the legislature is doing things for the right reason.
For the base assumption that you know, that is the will of the people through their elected representatives,
right?
And can uphold it. And I think it's great that he can say, well, you know, it's not really constitutional under the Commerce Clause, but it certainly has a tax or a penalty. It's absolutely within the powers of Congress.
And they didn't say that buying insurance is a tax. They're saying they can tax you with the penalty if you don't do something, which is buy insurance or acquire insurance in one form or another.
But, I mean, you know, we have other laws, that, especially at the state level, where the same principles apply, that the legislature's saying you have to spend some money. You know, when they say if you're going to drive a motorcycle, you have to have a helmet, or bicycle, you have to have a helmet. Well, they're not going to buy you the helmet. Mm-hmm. You have to go buy the helmet mm-hmm. because if you're going to play, you're going to wear a helmet.
Or if you want to drive, you have to have proof of insurance, you know?
I mean, there are a lot of things that...
Just drive around in a car with no insurance.
And the argument on the other side of this is, but you don't have to drive.
But see, that's not the same with healthcare. That's why this is nothing like broccoli.
Right.
You know, they're not telling you have to eat broccoli or Brussels sprouts or anything else. Mm-hmm. Because you will have healthcare in your lifetime.
Right. I mean, that's the difference.
And you are subject to the need for healthcare in an emergent situation at any moment, 24/7. Absolutely.
Agreed. And that's really what the difference is.
You don't have the need for broccoli, emergency broccoli needs. There's none.
Well, occasionally.
I've not experienced any.
I've had a broccoli emergency in my life. But, but that is the difference, that everybody does need health care, so everybody does have to buy health care. And that is a difference. I'm just thinking they're going to have to do a lot more. Mm-hmm. Once this gets implemented, they're going to find a whole lot of kinks in the system, especially here in Texas, especially here in Texas, where you have a state government that's going to actively work against
and the one in four people have no insurance, no coverage whatsoever.
A little bit more than that. Yeah.
One in 3.5.
I thought it's actually 1 in 4.1 or something. It's more than 25%. Not, it's like 25 point something percent, I thought. I mean, it's more than 1 in 4, which is horrible.
Yeah, it is.
you know, the problem is, and here's one of the things I see with implementing, most people who are against it who have health insurance, I'm not understanding why they're against it because they have health insurance, because the law is you keep your health insurance. I'm against it because, damn, I have to keep my health insurance. I don't want to keep the health insurance I have. I don't like the health insurance I have. It's bad, bad coverage, and I can't afford more than that. So.
Yeah, most of the people I've talked to are thinking that this is going to cause their premiums to go up instead of what everyone is saying, that it will possibly cause your premiums to go down. You know, and but they don't want to take that risk. They're fine where they're at. You know?
And I'm saying they won't go down for the reasons that I was saying about the healthcare companies need to be brought under control.
Yeah.
And it's not the doctors, it's not the hospitals, it's not healthcare providers at all. I think they've done everything they can to keep things under control. It is the insurance companies, the insurance companies, the insurance companies. I blame all of our costs and expenses on the insurance companies. I mean, I just do. In fact, medical costs will come down when everybody has coverage. The cost of malpractice insurance should come down too. Want to see that skyrocket?
Well, if you're not constantly treating only the sickest or highest risk patients, you know, and
no,
there are healthy
not,
people in there
it's
too.
It's not that. It's that if I have something that's wrong with me, that's your fault, Dr. Fink, and I have to sue you in order to make sure I get coverage. But if everybody, if we have universal coverage, that whole part of malpractice insurance is gone, which is a huge part of it. That's most of what malpractice suits are about. That part of it's gone. Want to see malpractice insurance rates not go down? They're not going to go down. The insurance companies need to be reined in. I see them as criminal organizations. I really do. I see no difference between criminal organizations and insurance companies. They have to be reined in. Anyway,
let's move to another topic.
Let's go to another topic.
Let's go on.
The healthcare decision.
Done.
Done.
Go ahead.
Well, I think it's interesting that it was. We were talking about Anderson Cooper coming out was a big story this week, but I think sort of a hidden story is what's happening in Washington State, where they've passed a law in the legislature, and the governor has signed it, and it was supposed to take effect June 7th, but there were these referenda that were supposed to come onto the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is to affirm that decision, and the other one that did not make it, there's no chance it's going to make it by Friday.
Right.
Is one that would say, you know, marriage is between one man and one woman. Mm-hmm. So that the marriage between one man and one woman is off the ballot for November, and I think that's great.
Right. So they can still vote to repeal this law.
Right. Not to affirm it.
Well, not to affirm it. Won't that repeal it or no?
Well, it will, but it's not really to repeal it. It's the affirmative language on the ballot is to affirm it.
Ah. Okay. So they can vote to make sure the law does not go into effect, which means that nothing would change, but they're not going to vote to make it illegal. In other words, the legislature could turn around and pass the same thing again.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what's really cool is, you know, companies like Starbucks and Nike and now Microsoft, two big players from Microsoft, Bill Gates and I believe it's Paul Allen,
mm-hmm.
Have each donated $100,000 to the effort. You know, to get this passed in November,
mm-hmm.
to affirm this bill that was passed.
So really, Washington's three biggest companies, Starbucks, Microsoft, and Boeing, are all against repeal. And Nike. Four.
So I think that's pretty big news. And I think it's a kind of a unique way of doing it, too, because if the legislature does it, it's really your elected officials, it's really the people speaking through their elected representatives. And the governor signs it, and some people say, no, you have to let people vote on it. Well, that's going to happen, too. You know, people are going to vote on it, too. And it's the same thing that's happening in Maryland, where is another case where it went through the legislature, was signed by the governor, and now it's to be affirmed by the people in November. And I think in both cases, I think it's going to pass. I think we're going to have marriage equality in Maryland and in Washington State.
That'll be a first.
Where everybody said it. This is what we want. So that'll be...
Well, except for the courts, because that was Arnold Schwarzenegger's argument.
No, the courts have to decide.
Right.
Let's give the activist judges.
Right. Activist judges, and, oh, no, the legislature said, no, we need the judges to say this now. So... And the other one is the Prop 8 case. What's going on with that?
I think it's headed to the Supreme Court as well.
Do you think the Supreme Court will hear it?
Yes, I do. I think they understand and can see that this is a compelling, back and forth. It's been a banter from the get-go, even within California before it hit the federal courts. It was the legislature speaking. It was... referenda on the ballot speaking. It was the Supreme Court in California speaking. So everybody's had a voice in this, and they're all bantering back and forth, and now it's hopped into the federal system. And I think that the justices would be remiss and irresponsible, a form of malpractice, in my opinion, if they did not take this case and address the issue.
Well, not necessarily, because sometimes by saying we're not going to hear the case, what they're really doing is affirming the lower court decision.
Now, but in some of those cases, the lower court decision would only affect one jurisdiction.
And in this one, it would too.
Right. That's why I think they will see that it's compelled. They're compelled to take it. Mm.
But what they might do is find and only get a consensus if they uphold what's already been upheld, that it only applies to that jurisdiction.
I think that would be an insane thing to do,
okay,
because it would create a patchwork quilt. But unless, you know, they fully expect this to just continue to be litigated for the next 20 years, and because they won't answer it for all jurisdictions, they'll answer it for one jurisdiction.
So you think Prop 8 will be the kid? Now, there are some DOMA cases going through.
Yeah, all of them, they're going to...
The DOMA cases absolutely will have an effect nationwide, because if the DOMA cases get to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court can then throw out DOMA.
Well, now the House, the U.S. House, mm-hmm. and their hired cronies, because the Department of Justice won't defend it, are asking the Supreme Court to take the case, and the Department of Justice is asking them to take the case. DOMA cases.
And that's in those cases when both sides are saying to the Supreme Court, please take the case, the Supreme Court, by not taking the case, would be upholding DOMA being unconstitutional.
At this point, yeah. But I think those are two paths at the same end. There's the Defense of Marriage Act making its way to the Supreme Court of the United States, and then there's this other issue of states who have modified their penal code and their law books and modified their state constitutions. And so I think those are both coming through, but I think ultimately all of them, that SCOTUS is going to have to take it.
Right.
But that's just my opinion. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I just can't see them, you know...
Ignoring it
and just letting it continue to be litigation forever,
mm-hmm.
you know, when one decision could answer everybody's.
In the Prop 8 case, the lower court found absolutely no reason to uphold Proposition 8. They said that they had every reason. It was a brilliant decision. Really brilliantly written, because it knocked down every single argument. And by the way, in the trial court, there were two witnesses. One of those witnesses, two witnesses for Proposition 8, one of those witnesses has now come out in favor of same-sex marriage.
he says it's inevitable.
Right.
You know, which I think is...
Well, and he's the one that when the trial was going on, he was talking about the advantages of marriage and all the reasons that we have marriage, because apparently he had written a book about marriage and what marriage does for society. So David Boies, who was the attorney on our side, David Boies said to him, well, do you think that marriage would then help gay couples? And he said, oh, well, yeah, off the top of my head, I can think of 10 reasons. And and David Boies kind of went, huh? But he said, oh, okay, well, what are some of those reasons? And he started listing them. And it turns out they were the exact same reasons that they're good for straight couples. You know, stability, and there are all those tax reasons, and it's good for children. And, you know, going through all those reasons, so why are you against this? And it turns out he really isn't against it. He's for marriage. It's just that for marriage doesn't necessarily mean for straight marriage. He just thinks marriage is healthy. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Letitia McDaniel. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people. Want to find out about upcoming events at KNON? Want to see pictures from past events or need information about the station? Then you need to like the official KNON Facebook page. It's easy to find. Just go to facebook.com/KNON893. It's the KNON 89.3 FM station-produced page for Facebook. It's the easiest way to keep up with what's going on here at KNON. Like us and share with your friends today. That's facebook.com/KNON893. Accept no substitutions.
This is Kimberly Truex of the GLBT Wedding Expo, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Letitia McDaniel and the late Patty Fink.
I'm alive.
And early today, so you're the early Patty Fink today. But we were just talking about the Proposition 8 case. So it passed the lower court. It went to the appeals court. The appeals court upheld the lower court. So they sued again for an en banc hearing. The en banc, again, agreed with the lower court. And so now it's up to the Supreme Court to decide if they're going to just uphold the lower court or if they're going to hear the arguments. Now, when they hear the arguments, and this is the interesting part about this case, first of all, our side will be argued by the person who probably has appeared before the Supreme Court more than anybody else, Ted Olson. Mm-hmm. He has more experience appearing before the Supreme Court probably than any other individual person. Maybe Lawrence Tribe has more experience. There might be one or two others. So one of the most experienced people. But all they can hear are the arguments that were argued in the lower courts. Mm-hmm. They can't start coming up with new arguments. So you know how the other side always comes up with the argument of the week that, well, this is the reason this week we're against it. We debunk that as being stupid. So they come up. They can't do that. They have to argue the same thing they argued that was completely knocked down by the lower courts. So we'll see what happens with that. With the DOMA cases, those are different in a way. One of them, the Massachusetts case, do you want to talk about that a little bit, what they're actually arguing?
Yeah, and then then we'll wrap up the whole Supreme Court thing. The Massachusetts case is really fighting DOMA because it's limiting, it's unfair to citizens of the state of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, because the law prevents them from receiving benefits and rights and responsibilities like every other married couple in the state. And so the state is suing.
State's arguing it's costing the state money, that if one person can't receive the Medicare benefits or the Social Security benefit, mm-hmm. Well, that's hurting us.
Right. And so the state's basically saying this is unfair treatment.
But one of their arguments that I love is it's not unfair treatment just to the people, it's unfair to our state. So, did you have another?
Another big piece of news I think that is really important this week is the merger between two great organizations, one sort of inside, one outside, mm-hmm. and that's the Service Members Legal Defense Network, or SLDN, and the organization OutServe are now merging. And I think that's really, really a smart move on within our community, so that service members who can now serve openly because Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, have those resources and that kind of institutional memory and understanding, both inside the military and outside the military, mm-hmm. about how to navigate forward, because there's still a lot left to do. There's no question there's a lot left to do if you are an out member of the United States military. But, I think that's a really smart move when it's so easy in our community, certainly in Dallas, to just make another organization, to consolidate to with the same focus and combine staffs and admin functions.
I think before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, they were doing two different things. One was defending service members who had been kicked out or were about to be. The other one was really serving members very quietly who were serving.
Right.
Now that they can serve, outserves function was kind of, okay, where do we go from here? SLDN was, okay, we know that there are all kinds of things we still need to litigate, but without them working together, it just, at this point, kind of seemed silly to have the two organizations.
And there's an awful lot of people who are who have been discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, with a variety of statuses, and discharged statuses, I mean, who are wanting to go back in, and they have to get that resolved. Or they want to get their status changed, because the sole reason they were kicked out was under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and now they've got, you know, perhaps something other than honorable or or dishonorable attached to this bogus law that was in place at the time they were kicked out. And so SLDN's been very instrumental in helping people, you know, navigate their way through those issues. And so, you know, when they've figured out what to do, it's something they need to share so that people can get back in and serve. Mm-hmm. And there are people, it's exciting to hear story after story, and even people who've, you know, been active in our community here have gone back in. And that's just exciting. That this is what they want to do. It's what they've always wanted to do.
Well,
and now they can serve
people
openly.
Like, one of the owners of the Dallas Eagle went back in. He only had a few more years to serve in order to get his retirement. So he figured,
might as well.
It's what he enjoyed doing anyway. He went back in to finish a few years and not have like 17 years wasted.
Right.
So.
Right.
So good for them. You know, and doing it for the right reasons and for healthy reasons.
And I think they're going
to
begin
the country
and merging their boards and making sure that they do those it sort of equally and their resources and that brain trust, you know, people who know what to do.
Right. Right. But the reasons for them to be separate are not there anymore.
Right, yeah, exactly.
What's been fun watching is, you know, when Don't Ask, Don't Tell went away, I think everybody expected, okay, we're going to quietly serve and not make a big deal about it, right? The Pentagon just had their first Pride Week celebration. At the Pentagon. Right. Yeah. Now, when West Point created their GSA, I just laughed. I mean, I don't think anybody really expected that kind of level of people being out in the military. But it's important. And I mean, I know it bothers a lot of real conservatives that they're doing this, but I think the GSA at West Point formed for their safety, even. For the same reason GSAs form at any school. You have a gay straight alliance because you want to know who your friends are and you want to make the statement, you're not going to bully us and we are going to be safe here. And that's the main reason for the GSAs to form.
And so, if it's coming from the command staff too, I think that's reinforced with the GSA.
And of course, you know, every, you know, company or you know, company or school has a right to have these kind of diverse or you know, organizations on their campus. You know, you have maybe, you know, African American student organizations, you have like maybe a Latino, and I don't see why GSA would be any different in, you know, as far as West Point. I'm sure adding that to their, you know, criteria as far as, you know, on campus or, you know, organizations. And the same thing with a job, they can add all these kind of diversity groups in this, you know, just having a Pride Week or celebrating Black History Month, which they do at, you know, where I work at, or celebrating Latino Month. You know, it's just adding on to what they've already, you know, provide for their employees at, you know, at the Pentagon, probably.
See, where I work, we have a Straight History Month, so that we remember.
That's every day.
We remember the contributions of those other people because we tend to forget at my office. LULAC did something really interesting this week. LULAC passed a resolution supporting same-sex marriage. It was introduced by the Houston Rainbow Council, and good for them. Houston Rainbow Council was a spinoff of the Dallas Rainbow Council, and so we can take some credit for it.
Right.
Jesse Garcia was right there in the middle of all of the negotiating and everything else about it. But this was, I think, even more significant than something like the NAACP coming out in favor of same-sex marriage. And the reason I think it's more important is because it was the general membership that voted on it. It wasn't the leadership who just decided, let's do this. It was the general membership. They voted on it and voted on it by a large margin. And then
a couple weeks before, La Raza, which is the largest Latino organization in the country, actually larger than LULAC, I don't know if it was the board or was it the general membership that voted also to support marriage equality. And I know that LULAC has done it in the past, and hate to, you know, not steal some of Houston's thunder, but Dallas, mm-hmm. you know, led the way for before they became their Rainbow Council. Dallas has led the way as far as getting LULAC on board, as far as supporting marriage equality with resolutions back. I don't know when the first one was, probably 2009 or 2010 was the first resolution mm-hmm. they did at their national convention. So, mm-hmm. you know, way to go, Latinos, you know.
Right.
And black people too.
Yes, yes. And another first for Dallas. I mean, the LULAC Rainbow Council started here. Well, so did the Federal Club. Mm-hmm. So did Black Tie Dinners. Plus,
yeah.
you know, we're the kind of the first, you know, National Coming Out Project. I mean, all those things.
Isn't the largest Stonewall here in Dallas also?
Yep. The largest mm-hmm. Stonewall chapter.
Didn't right here form here though originally.
Well, no, didn't form.
But we are the largest now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
So lots of firsts and lots of big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're good at those organizations things. You know, it's kind of like when our friends George and Jack, they were celebrating their 50th anniversary, came on our show last year to talk about it, and I was talking to Jack and saying, you know, some of these stories you're telling, we need to write them down. We need to preserve them. We need to record people talking about their stories. And so Jack started sending out emails to everybody he knows, you know, should we create this organization? And should we, do you think this will fly? Was basically his theme for it. And George's response to that was, oh, God, not another organization.
So we have so many in this.
We do. We're real good at creating organizations. But ours is actually not the first history project. Do you know the gay and lesbian community in Los Angeles has had an affiliation with University of Southern California and done a history project? Theirs is 50 years old.
Wow.
They have been working on their history for 50 years. So, but that's the only other city that we've found that really is doing something like this.
I think Houston is also. They have an archive at one of the, I think it's at Rice University. They have this archives thing that they've been working with as far as with the resource, the Houston Pride Center, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and you know what? Houston's not real good at forming organizations. They just don't get along. So,
well, you know, they had the Dallas Way, which is George and Jack's group.
Yeah.
Had an event, I guess it was last Thursday mm-hmm. evening, that I really wanted to attend.
It was great.
I really wanted to be there to hear those stories. Mm-hmm. And I hope somebody recorded it.
Oh, yes. They're videoed.
And that we can, you know, access that at some mm-hmm. point. Mm-hmm. But because at the same night, they also had the last showing of the Rainbow Lounge.
Oh, did you finally see it?
The Raid of the Rainbow Lounge, yes. Mm-hmm. Aaron and I went, and it was just great. Mm-hmm. It was a really wonderful documentary.
It is done just really well.
And kudos to Robert Comini.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. So.
Oh, you haven't seen it? You have to go see it. Wonderful video.
You're in it quite a lot.
Yeah, I just haven't had a chance.
So is Aaron.
Yeah.
Aaron has a small part,
but
she's
haven't had a chance, and hopefully I will before I... Uh-huh. Hopefully they show it again before I leave, but I don't think it'll happen. Maybe they'll show it in Iowa. Maybe I could bring it to Iowa.
Yeah. Put the bug in the ear for their film festival, wherever it is, and have them come.
The video will come out soon, too.
Oh, that is true.
DVD. It's a well-done documentary. It really is very well done. I've seen it several times. Recommend it. Everybody I know who has seen it, everybody who is kind of like, oh, do I feel like sitting through that? Everybody loves it.
Yeah, it was very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're almost out of time. Couple of quickies. François Hollande, the new president of France, he announced that 2013 there is going to be same-sex marriage in France that will include adoption rights. And, you know, it's funny how in Europe, usually, those adoption rights are always taken separately. He said it'd be full marriage. A recent survey in France showed that 6.5% of the population is gay, and only 4.5% of the population considers themselves Catholic. actual numbers that they released recently. Ted Cruz, running for the Senate,
In the GOP primary.
In the GOP
Texas.
Primary, he criticized Leppert for marching in the Pride Parade. Leppert said, "I was the mayor of everybody in Dallas." And you have to respect him for standing up in front of that audience and saying that. Ted Cruz's biggest donor, turns out, is Peter Thiel. Is it pronounced
Thiel? Thiel.
Peter Thiel, the founder of PayPal, who's gay.
And who was a venture capitalist who invested early on in Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Peter Thiel is gay.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But
and very libertarian.
Cruz's
he had been
biggest...
giving money to Ron Paul.
Uh-huh.
So I guess now he's switched over and is focusing on Ted Cruz.
On Ted Cruz, because Ted Cruz is such a delight.
and that primary is coming up on July 31st.
Right.
So if you're listening and you haven't put it on your calendar, you need to plan to early vote, which is now a verb. Have you early voted? Yes, I've early voted. You know, that kind of thing. So you can early vote or vote on Tuesday, July 31st.
When does early voting start?
Probably the week
just
before.
Just the week before.
I think two weeks before. Yeah.
2 weeks before.
We'll find out. We'll announce it on the air to make sure people go out and early vote. Have a nice 4th of July. We'll be back next week with more Lambda Weekly.